Salgado, and you're listening to Seriously Local.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Loco, the seriously crazy fan podcast for El Paso Locomotive FC, proud member of the Beautiful Game Network, and brought to you, as always, by Roughneck Scarves. I'm your host, Phil Bakke, and we have a full show tonight. We got four people on the show. So welcoming back for the first time in a while, first and foremost, Austin Young, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be back. Just don't call it a comeback.
No, it's a pleasure to have you back. It feels like it's been a long, long time. It's not as long as we all think, but anytime that we're missing a member of the crew, it always feels like a loss. So it's always great to have you back. I am joined once again as well by Mika Burrell. Mika, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I hate to miss the pod, but glad to be back after a win, a dub.
Absolutely. These are always the best. And Christian, you've been here through thick and thin the last few weeks, even for the watch alongs as well. So welcome back as always, Christian.
Yeah, man. Thank you. It's sometimes you got to stick through it to reap the rewards. So it was worth it. It was a good game on Saturday.
Yeah, the night's always darkest before the dawn.
Exactly.
And so when we came out of that loss in Phoenix, a lot of things not going Locomotive's way in that particular game. So tonight we get to talk about a triumph over Tacoma on El Paso Strong Night in the SWUP. And we will get to that 2-0 win here in a little bit. Plenty to dissect there. We'll also look ahead to our Copa Tejas match coming up against RGV next weekend, or this coming weekend. But first, Locomotive hit us with a little bit of a surprise drop. We joked about them lemonading with the with the fourth kit. They teased us a little bit yesterday, and then today dropped the Noche de Locos fourth kit. Christian, you're wearing it, so I'm gonna let you sound off first. The limited run, 140 made. Are you feeling like you snagged like some off-white Supreme
hype beast
level drop right now?
Yeah, man, definitely. I am surprised that they decided to go for 140. I'm curious where that number comes from. Is that like the minimum amount you need to order, like to get the 15% discount or something? Or I don't know about that, but yeah, I love it. Yesterday I was feeling a little worried when they had the little teaser. I didn't know exactly what they were going for with that picture. We've all kind of let our opinions be known, but I was afraid it was some sort of like Western cowboy kind of vibe, and so I wasn't digging that. But they definitely came through when they when they gave us the full view today. So I got lucky enough that my wife was able to happened to be passing by, driving from one place of work to another, and she was able to snag one. So I'm loving it. I'm loving all the little details that are involved, and you can tell that a lot of thought went into making it. So props to there's a member of the graphic design team. I read an article where they interviewed her, and so props to, I forgot what her name was, but she deserves all the credit in the world for a really well put together kit.
Yeah, I mean, it has an awesome look about it. Austin, I mean, the team's going to wear it twice this season. How are you feeling about this fourth kit for us?
I personally love it. I mean, it just brings out a lot of the heritage of El Paso, and anytime a team drops a new kit, it's pretty good. I think when we were talking about it, I was getting frustrated because we're not big enough to come out on footy headlines. So I couldn't get a preview of what it was going to look like. But no, I think it's great. And I mean, it shows something about the community. Just wish they would have brought out more and, made the size a little bit bigger.
Yeah, that is the tough part of a limited run. But I mean, I don't know. I was really caught off guard by this. Do you think a pretty cool move by the club, Mika?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm surprised. I remember at the beginning of the season we thought that we'd be lucky to get a third, but yeah. Now we have a fourth, so we just have, this club's just dripping out here. But, no, yeah, the Sugar Skulls, the Calaveras, as it were, they look awesome. I like that the sponsors, although we love our sponsors because obviously they sponsor the club,
yeah,
they're not so in your face like they are on other kits.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it really allows the artwork to show through. So yeah, they're really cool. If you were lucky enough to get one, they're awesome.
Yeah, big shout out. Of all the detail and the amazing design of it, I really love probably the most basic part of it, which is the just little collar detail of the Mexican flag. Very, very cool. Of the red, white, and green up top. I just think that's just a really nice touch. Obviously, being a Borderland city, it's just a nice little nod. And yeah, I mean, so shout out to the club and BLK for dropping some heat in the middle of the week and helping us move closer to the weekend with something to get excited about in a couple of upcoming home games. But obviously, this past weekend, the city was, and I would say especially, you know, obviously Locomotive fans were kind of on edge about this game coming up. And Eighth Notch worked through, and Mika, I'll throw this one to you first, but Eighth Notch prepared a TIFO ahead of this match against Tacoma because it was going to be El Paso Strong Night. It's the first home match since the events of August 3rd. That pre-match TIFO, when you see it unfurled and see the pictures post-match, I mean, how did that hit you?
Oh, it's amazing. Big credit to Eighth Notch. Those guys and gals, they do such amazing work. I mean, they've had amazing TIFOs before, but this one obviously is the most touching one. And I believe Eighth Notch posted on Twitter today, and today is Tuesday, but you'll be listening to this on Wednesday. But go check it out, because they really do show you the detail in the TIFO, specifically the names of the 22 victims who they were memorializing on the TIFO. And of course, there's pictures floating around. USL Championship has shared a lot of pictures of the TIFO, and it's really just an awesome piece of art and a labor of love, really. And you know, actually, I took my mom to her first Locomotive game, and she doesn't know much about, you know, soccer culture and all that. And when she saw it unfurl, she was sitting next to me, and I could just hear like a sharp intake of breath, like she didn't know that was going to happen, and it was just. It was really beautiful, and she said that, you know, it was really touching, and she even said, you know, with all the flags going and the lights and just everyone coming together, that it was really touching. And so big ups to Eighth Notch and everyone really at the SWUP that night made the atmosphere really special.
Well, that's what I mean, Christian, sitting in the stadium, it felt there was like a tangible energy before the game. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, 100%. You know, when you see everyone, the teams coming out into the field, and you see, Fusion, is that correct? And you see, Fusion coming out on the field with the players, you could just kind of tell what kind of night it was going to be. And you're just really glad to have seen that there was, you know, a good turnout for the game.
Yeah.
I really love that the club, you know, gave out those flags just to kind of give something else to kind of bring everyone together and kind of make sure that everyone kind of stayed aware that of kind of what we were doing this for. And that even though we do come to these games to, you know, get away and kind of get our minds off of things, that there's ways to do that, but also to not forget. Because that would be, you know, tragic to do that. So it was awesome. And, yeah, you could definitely, so the whole night, you know, especially if, you know, during the games you're looking on Twitter and seeing how it wasn't just us.
Yeah.
You know, there's teams all over the country that are with us, you know, supporting us and kind of just letting us know that we're not this little city that, you know, sometimes being in El Paso we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
That people do recognize us and that people do, you know, see that we're all in this together as humans.
Yeah. I mean, Austin, like, I think you saw, you know, during the game and all the social media stuff going on in the aftermath, like, seeing that outreach from places like San Antonio and Sacramento, even, I'm blanking on one. as well.
I think Austin Bold.
Austin Bold, well. Yeah. So just all these teams kind of reaching out. I mean, does it just highlight, you know, not just Texas, but soccer kind of as a unifying force at the end of the day? As much as we get worked up about it, it's just the beautiful game at the end of the day.
It really is. I mean, it just brings people together. short little story, I was actually in San Antonio that weekend, and I was walking along the Riverwalk with my 8th Knot shirt, and I had about two or three guys come up to me, and they were actually inviting me out to that game that night. I think they were playing RGV, and they started telling me how they were going to kind of do a little something to commemorate, you know, what had happened. So I thought that was pretty cool, and being in a different city like that, you could still feel the impact. So, I mean, and you're right, the soccer does unite people, and it was great. I'm not going to lie, the pre-match video that they had on the broadcast kind of had me tearing up a bit.
Yeah.
It really did. It had a big impact on us, and I'm glad what the club did.
Yeah, it is a great response. There was also a pointed quote at the end of the match by Seb Velasquez in his interview, where he said, you know, we needed you guys, and you guys needed us. And I think that kind of captured a lot of what that match was about, where it was about, you know, enjoying 90 minutes of kind of escaping and just enjoying the sport for what it was. But at the same time, getting that the catharsis of celebrating goals and celebrating a win. So it was this kind of like symbiotic relationship between the club and its, you know, its supporters. And I think it's an important moment that the club handled extremely well. And I'm glad to be able to, you know, come out the other side with a win as well, just because it would, you know, it, I don't know, like life and soccer are so connected in a lot of ways, and it's hard to connect, or it's hard to disconnect the disappointment of soccer from the disappointment of the day to day, I guess. And so in this case, it was just amazing to come out the other side with something tangible in the form of, you know, two amazing goals and a win. When things get started, though, lineups announced. First off, we do get a little bright spot of news. Jerome Kiesewetter at least fit enough for the bench on this one. But Andrew Fox starting up top. Me and Christian have talked about Foxy up top. Talked about the thought process, talked about his experience there. But for you guys, Mika and Austin, who, you know, haven't had a chance to talk about this, is when you watch Fox play as a striker, is it just that, oh, he's just our emergency kind of option? Or do you see something about his game where, I mean, in a pinch, we can use him?
No, I definitely see something about his game where it doesn't shock the conscience to see him up top and playing that number nine role. I would never accuse Mark Lowry of abandoning Lowry ball, but I think that when you see Foxy up there in that spot, you can tell what the intent is, and that's, you know, to aim at his head and hope for that, you know, something goes in. He's a big guy. He can win those aerial duels, and even when he's not, you know, trying to get the ball to his head, he cuts it back pretty nicely too. For others that are coming into the box. So, yeah, I think when you see him up there, it's clear that it's a more direct approach, you know, from the team, as opposed to, you know, passing it about and looking for kind of that perfect opening, that perfect chance. So
sure. Austin, I'm gonna move on slightly, but we played what looked like a 4-2-3-1 when you put it down on paper. Yeah. But right before we started recording, we talked a little bit about how both Sebastians start this one, Contreras and Velasquez. And in your mind, are those two almost a little too similar in the way that they, in the places they try to play the ball, where tactically this setup felt a little kind of lopsided?
It did, really. I mean, from the moment I saw the lineup, I even was a little worried. Just having those two dynamic players in the same area playing together. You know, I think it would have worked differently if maybe one was on top and one was playing lower, but playing side by side, I think, did create maybe a little bit of a, not an issue, but definitely some problems when it comes to trying to develop and play there.
So, I mean, Mika, you said it, but a little kind of a different tactical approach this time around from Mark. And Christian, I mean, we know that Mark sticks by his guns, but do you think it was a little bit of, hey, I need a result, and what we've been doing just hasn't been working over this stretch, so we're going to try something different?
Yeah, so to be honest, when I was watching the game, I didn't really feel so much like that. Maybe that's just because I'm not that observant of that kind of stuff. But when you look at the numbers, you can definitely tell. I think this is probably the first game, maybe not the first game, it's definitely the first win where we're outpossessed by the other team. They completed more passes than we did. So I think it just kind of goes to show you that we did kind of deviate away from the style. Because against a team where, at least on paper, we should kind of be able to stick to whatever game plan we want to see that the numbers did not show that, I think shows that even for someone who strictly goes by the numbers, you could see that there was something different about this game.
And I mean, the different tactical approach in this one, did it make you guys uneasy at all, kind of straying from the principle? As much as we've said, oh, you know, should we look at playing more direct, or should we look at, you know, doing things a little bit differently when we start getting, you know, numerically kind of away from our norm in terms of the way we pass and all that stuff? It's still, I don't know, to me, it kind of makes you feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, especially because Mark Lowry is so public about the way that he wants to play. And, you know, it's our first season of existence, and we talked about this earlier. It's important to establish a philosophy, an identity. People might think that's a little bit lofty for a club like us, but I don't think so, and I don't think Mark thinks so either, or you know, the management. So, but with that being said, sometimes you do just have to try something new. And you know, when you go, was it 8 games that we didn't win, 8 or 9?
Yeah,
I think it was a full 9.
Something like that, right? Yeah, I mean, when you've got a dismal run of form like that, sometimes you just need to, you know, pull a rabbit out the hat and try something else, because we all want to play the ideal football, which is possession,
right?
For a lot of us anyway. I certainly think so, but yeah, I think it was brave of the players and of the coaching staff to try something. So
that the first half kicks off, and it's a little dicey from Locomotive to open the game, which we haven't really seen that often. We've normally seen a strong opening 10 and then concede that first big chance. This one, we looked a little bit uneasy, but didn't really give anything big up. And I mean, from the get-go, Austin, Edson Partida is that outlet out on the left, providing that width. I mean, how important was Edson to this setup?
I think it was important because you're right, he did provide that width. And it kind of brings back with having both Sebastians on the pitch, because Byron, we're used to seeing him go up the right, but usually gets a little help. So just having one guy outside by himself was a bit of, like, provided that outlet. So having him out there the way he was playing was pretty pivotal. And, I mean, obviously came through, you know, with that one goal he had. So
yeah, we'll
get to it.
We'll definitely talk about that. I don't know if I'll ever stop talking about that goal. But it's an interesting approach, because the way that I saw it, and I don't know if you guys agree, but the way that it looked to me was essentially, like you said, Austin, Bryan is the one on the right providing width in attack. He's the one getting forward down the right, because Contreras and Velasquez at times are dropping deep. They're both kind of central. So Bryan on the overlap is really providing the width out right. Edson's providing it out left, with Moses more so kind of staying at home defensively. So it was a really interesting dynamic, because we haven't really seen that from Locomotive yet this season. We normally see, you know, a combination of wide attackers with the fullbacks kind of linking up and creating more going forward, whereas without Kiffey and then without, you know, a wide attacker such as...
Like Omar,
or, you know, previously it would have been Derek or somebody out there. But yeah, Omar in this case... we kind of traded one for one, where we had a wide attacker out left, and then we had our right back playing as a wide attacker out right. So a little bit of a weird kind of asymmetric setup. It ends up paying off. Edson whipping in a few crosses early. Foxy with his chances. I mean, Christian, that one, is it just a matter of it? Edson whips the cross in, and it hits Foxy's right foot instead of his left. If he can take it with his left, do you think it's probably a goal?
I don't know. You have to hope so. You have to have some sort of reasoning for why that shot, you know, turned out the way that it did. But that's one of those things where, you know, you can't do anything except be critical and say that has to go in, you know, like,
yeah,
there's not a more on target cross the whole game, I don't think, except for maybe the goal.
I wouldn't even call that on target, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because that was quite the stretch. You're right. I take that back. That's a good point. So, yeah, that was probably that was probably the most on target cross all day. Basically, all you have to do is hit it straight, you know, get that good contact, and you're set. So, oh well, I guess.
Yeah. Is it those moments where we miss Jerome the most?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because, I mean, he's naturally a defender. And you're right, I think you tweeted out that he scored like 30-some goals.
In college.
In college. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, he has the experience putting the ball in the net, but it's that situation where a striker has the nose for the net and somebody else might not. So, I mean, his used to probably just seeing a volley come in and just get contact on it instead of positioning his foot, regardless if it's his off foot, to put it into the net. So, I mean, it is those situations that you miss Kisa better, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about it. A cross like that immediately calls to mind, you know, goals against New Mexico and against Sac Republic, where Kiesvetter's like kind of improvising with a whipped cross like that. And I think it's tough to replicate that sort of delivery in training enough to where Foxy's going to do something instinctive.
Yeah, 100%, because there's not a way of replicating that exact situation, especially in terms of the defenders and the pressure of a match situation. But I mean, yeah, there's exactly like you said, there were times that the crosses have been just absolutely fizzed into Kiesvetter, and he just has, you know, the touch and the awareness to just use the pace on the ball to put it in.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Fox, yes, that's a sitter, I suppose you could say, but he doesn't have that same kind of technical quality, obviously.
A few minutes later, the 22nd minute rolls around, and again, a silence kind of falls over Southwest University Park. Kind of an eerie moment. Like, it was awesome. Like, it was an amazing tribute, but there was definitely just, like, that weird energy again. And I don't know if you guys noticed, because I know initially I was kind of caught up in just watching the stadium. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really even watching what was going on. Locomotive almost, there's a very like bang bang play where Locomotive almost conceded a penalty in that moment. There's like a brief argument by Tacoma. Does that almost speak to like a home field advantage where the second the crowd is silent, there's a moment of kind of panic for Locomotive? Like, that's only half a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Because it legit happened as soon as everybody got quiet. Yeah. It just, like, all of a sudden, there was just a little bit of unease, like, everywhere.
You have to wonder if, like, Kit caught everyone on the field, like, off guard, almost. Yeah. It's weird that even in the stands when I think a lot of people were already aware what was going to happen, and they made an announcement, too, I believe.
They did, yeah.
Where most fans are, you know, kind of aware of what's going to happen. You hear the stands go quiet, and you almost expect, like, the action on the field to stop. So there was kind of this little, like, this...
Like a disconnect.
Yeah, like a disconnect from... It was weird. Yeah. I'm sitting in my seats, which... you know, not trying to flex, but they're just a couple rows away from the field. And so to
weird flex, yeah. Okay.
No, no flex.
You hear, you know, the communication on the pitch, which you don't really get to hear when there's so much noise around you. And so it's just, there was just a lot weird about it. And so, yeah, like I said, I don't think it's too crazy to say that maybe it did catch someone. Not that everyone just stopped what they were doing and turned their heads and look, but
right.
It is possible that you lose your focus for a second and then you have to, you know, do what you have to do to get back.
Yeah, I mean, well, and Mika, I'll use a German example, but almost the reverse happened in Union Berlin's first Bundesliga game where they held a silent protest for 15 minutes against Red Bull.
Yeah.
And then RB Leipzig score in the 16th.
Yeah, that was brutal. Yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, Red Bull Leipzig or Rasenballsport Leipzig,
yeah.
Excuse me, they're
not
Red Bull.
Red Bull.
I mean, they're pretty universally hated in Germany, and that's exactly what you just said, Phil. It's 15 minutes of silence, 16 minute bang, 1-0.
Yeah.
And it's just brutal.
Yeah. So I think
there is definitely something to it. I mean, the players are used to that, like, ruckus, and so
sure.
When you take that away, it reminds me of there was a time, I think it was Barcelona. There was a lot of, like, turmoil about the Catalan independence movement. I think they played a match behind closed doors, and they kind of, like, leaked the footage afterwards. It was, like, awkward. Just
yeah. Yeah, anytime you watch a match where it's, like, behind closed doors, it's, like, the most awkward
thing. Yeah, and you can hear all the players shouting. Like, you know in your mind that happens, but to, like, see
yeah.
it, it's
and actually
weird.
Hear it,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
for once.
Yeah,
and it's
yep. really strange.
There's a Liverpool match a couple seasons ago. They were playing Sunderland, and to protest a raise in season ticket prices, the supporters all walked out on 76 minutes, and Liverpool had a 2-0 lead and blew it in the final 14 minutes of the match.
It'll
so
do
like,
it. That'll do it to you.
Just playing in silence. So yeah, it was it definitely, not to say that the tribute wasn't, because it was amazing. Like
it was
so impactful that it felt like you could feel it in the stadium. It
right.
was very impactful, and luckily Lokomotiv able to escape with any on-field consequences, but still would have been worth it regardless. The next moment of the match was worth the price of admission. Edson Partida scores one of the goals of the season, if not the goal of the season, with a ridiculous overhead kick. I just want to send this like around the table. Your initial reaction to the goal, like, what was that moment from your viewpoint, you know, whether watching in the stadium or on the stream?
It was like,
bruh.
Like, the ball went up, and then I see him running towards you. I was like, all right, he's going to track it down. And I see him start to throw his leg up. I was like, no way. Like, it was almost like got the hotel security called on me when I was watching it.
Oh, my God. I mean, I was still trying to get over, like, Aritz Aduriz doing that
right.
at age 38 against Barcelona.
Yeah, to
like,
win.
A few
to
days ago.
Yeah.
And then you see Edson Partida do it at the swap. It's just on El Paso Strong night. I mean, it's
yeah.
just poetic. I mean, and isn't this what we watch soccer for?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the sport, the camaraderie, but it's really the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that just summed the night up, I feel. And it helped us on to a win in terms, you know,
right.
in the sporting sense, it was great too. But I mean, my goodness, it takes so much. You have to calculate so much to get that right.
Yeah.
I mean, the pace of the ball and how it's coming in, the angle, like it's, and that, and it can be a dangerous play too.
Of course.
Because of, you know, how you land. So it was just amazing. And from such a young player too, it's awesome.
So I don't think that I shared this with you guys, but I did not see the goal when it happened.
Anyway.
So, as I'm flexing so much this game.
This is Bonky Studios is a no flex zone.
No, I'm about to flex on the next one. So
as season ticket holders,
yeah.
My wife and I, we have, you know, we get X amount of passes to the West Star Club, you know, for the season. And we haven't used any this year yet.
Yeah.
So we're getting towards, you know, the last four or five games of the season. We have four passes, so we got to start using them.
Yeah, I need to use mine. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah. And I was waiting for the 22nd minute tribute before I used him, and then we started waiting some more. And at you know, minute 23, you know, my wife was like, let's go. And I said, like, let's just wait a little longer, because I know that as soon as we go, they're going to score a goal. And so we waited 10 minutes, and sure enough, we had just gone up the stairs, turned our backs to the field, and the crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
So, of course, I'm standing there furious, absolutely fuming. And my wife's just like, hey, well, at least they scored a goal. And I'm like, okay, you know, maybe it's one of our trademark locomotive goals where, you know, they just kind of tap it into the goal. Yay. Sure. So she says, let's just...
Edson don't do tap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
now, not ever. And so we looked at the board, and sure enough, and, you know, I'm pretty sure steam was coming out of my ears, but it's whatever. So I did not see it when it happened, so I didn't get to have that reaction.
That's it. Now, whenever we need a goal, Christian, you have to go up there.
Yeah, like, yeah. I guess that's what we got to do now. Got to take one for the team.
So this is not my flex. So I was up in the press box, and no, so, you know, it's kind of common, whatever, press box etiquette, and Mika, you know this, coming through, like, sports journalism and all that stuff, you don't cheer in the press box. Yeah. It's just, like, not, it's kind of unseemly if you're just, like, out there, like, screaming or whatever. It's not done. It's bad. But I will say that when that goal went in, everybody in that press box was like, oh, RIP headphone users. But no, like, legit, we were, everybody just screamed, because it was just amazing. Like, it was just something that, and I tweeted it at the time. It was like, that's the best goal I've seen live ever. Like,
yeah.
You know, in person, it's the best goal I've seen, period. So now I'm about to burst everybody's bubble, because in the post-match, if you guys listen to Omar and Edson's post-match, Edson, obviously, he only speaks Spanish, but Omar was in there as well as a goal scorer, translating for Edson.
Daniel wasn't there to translate this
time? No, Daniel wasn't around to translate this time. Normally he helps out, but no. So, so when they asked Edson, is it the best goal you've scored? He said, no.
What?
I've scored one better. Which I thought was hilarious. I thought that was the best answer.
Everyone's flexing today.
Yeah, but then someone asks, you know, like, what was, you know, like, talk us through what you were thinking. And he was like, I was just trying to cross the ball back into the area. Like, so he admitted.
With a bike?
He admitted that he did not mean it, which, I mean, credit to him. Because most players will, you know, there'll be some left back that clearly was trying to cross and scores, like, a screaming goal, right?
Like Zappa Costa.
And they're like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, I meant to do that, for sure. I saw the keeper off his line, you know? So for Edson to come out and be like, yeah, I didn't mean to do that. I was just trying to cross it back like that.
And honestly, I came in here ready to argue that he intended to do that. Like, if you look at the way his foot is positioned, you're right. Thinking he's trying to do it.
No, it does look like he's trying to score, but it's just funny because he immediately after the match is like, nah, I was trying to put it back into the danger area, and it went in, so I'm thankful that it went in, or whatever. And it's like, well, you're number one on SportsCenter top 10. So I hope you...
No, that's a
how
flex.
About you just change your story?
Yeah. What I thought, like, I think out of all the people that were going to score that goal, would be least surprised it was Edson, because I think we've seen him take, like, at least two bikes this year.
Yeah.
And miss them both, obviously, yeah. But I think he's the only player, I think...
Against RSL, he made contact, like, in the draw at home just a few weeks ago. He tried to overhead it, you know, Chilena, whatever you want to call it, but he tried it and made really good contact, but the ball went, you know, high and wide.
Yeah, so in a way, like, it's almost not surprising. Yeah. If it had to happen, I think that's who we would have said was going to score that goal.
Yeah, no, so Edson grabs the golazo, and I mean, it's just after half an hour. Locomotive hadn't really impressed up to that point that much, created a couple of good chances, but hadn't really looked as good as they've looked in the past. how big is grabbing that goal right before halftime in just in terms of the momentum of that match?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, of course, to go 1-0 up and then take it to the locker room with you, but the way that we went 1-0 up, I'm sure that gave the guys confidence going forward. And, I mean, fair play to Edson because he looked up for it from the whistle. I mean, he was trying to make things happen, you know. I mean, in the, I think it was like the 8th or 9th minute, he took a man on and cut it across. I mean, then he had that free kick that was... I think it was, like, through the wall, really.
Under
the wall. And so, like...
I think he even bounced off the keeper.
Yeah, he made a save. So, I mean, he was feeling it. And, you know, for him to be rewarded like that, it was great. And so, yeah, it set us up nicely, I think.
Yeah. I think last week, really, not the Tacoma game, but the Phoenix game, I think that really gave him some confidence because he was able to score in that one for the first time since, you know, week 4 or whatever when he had the brace.
Yeah.
So I think that combined with, you know, the fact that, Derek is not with us anymore. I think Mark might have even had a conversation, not with us.
With OKC.
I think Mark maybe had a talk with him that we can say, hey, like, you're that guy now, you know, if Omar's not scoring and Jerome isn't on the field, it's gotta be you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, like we've said before, Mark has the ability to bring, you know, a lot of good out of these players that maybe are kind of just on the edge there. They just need kind of the push to get to be there to maximize their potential.
I think at the end of the day, Mark probably has to look at Edson and say, okay, he's scored more than anybody else who's not named Jerome Kiesewetter. And that means something at this point of the season. Like, it may not have meant something when he came off the bench and scored a brace against Orange County because the game state matters and those, you know, particular situations presenting themselves matter. But at this point, it's kind of tough to deny he's scoring important goals.
Yeah.
Like,
what I'm wondering, maybe if, like, when Toluca came to play Juarez, they had a word with Mark Lowry, like, hey, you need to play him more or something, you know? Like,
and they need to follow the terms of the loan.
Yeah. I've gotten that message on FM enough times. Hey, you're not playing, you're loney enough. So Tacoma, the last time we played Tacoma, we talked a lot about their midfield and how they foul all the time. Do you think the tactical change is influenced at all by the fact that a lot of our buildup was being broken up by Tacoma's game plan of breaking up our buildup by fouling?
Oof. So they're like the not as good City is what you're saying.
They're like a very, in my, out of possession, they're a very negative team.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, we saw this the first time we played them. It is hard to match their energy. This is a very young team. A lot of these guys are really, you know, trying to get a look in with Seattle Sounders. And so sometimes they might overplay or overpress or whatever you want to call it, you know, launch into fouls. And so, yeah, that I could see that having something to do with kind of our tactics being affected, especially in terms of possession. So, I mean, our midfielders are a bit older, so
right. Sometimes and have played like a stupid amount of minutes.
Exactly, yeah, especially Richie Ryan, yeah, like Richie. Jesus. I mean that is a good point.
I mean, with them being the more energetic team, the second half starts. Tacoma come out the stronger team. They come out. They start the second half better than we did. They looked kind of dangerous at the beginning of the second half. But we're still creating on the break, and it looks like the game plan's working. We talked about the negative nature of everything. The 60th minute rolled, you know, the hour mark rolls around. Chiro and Toko and Justin Dillon involved in a off the ball incident. About 4 minutes elapse. And Chiro is eventually sent off after a little conversation between the referee and his assistant. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people, and I can't figure out what happened. The Chiro sending off from your guys' perspective and now having the ability to, you know, watch the incident or see the commentary or whatever, does anyone know what happened?
Nope.
No tier one sources this week.
Or? I tried to get an answer from someone who would know the answer, but I did not receive a response in time. Don't know if that was intentional, but no, I have no clue. And it's clear. It was clear from the broadcast that they had no clue either.
Yeah.
And so it was just weird because Chiro was not even the most animated person in that whole situation,
right?
From Locomotive, at least.
Sure.
But then when he does get the red card, he doesn't protest too much. So I just have no clue what it could have been. I mean,
yeah. The only thing I can think of is maybe him saying some vulgar things to the ref. That's about it.
Does your captain do that? I don't know.
In the post-match, Mark specifically says, like, I'm going to have to watch it back to see what the actual incident is. I have to talk to Chiro to see what his side of the story is. Because they, you know, when asked if they would pursue an appeal of the red card to the league, especially to avoid Chiro being suspended against RGV, Mark said they would look into it. He couldn't really comment on the incident itself because it happened off the ball and he didn't really know what was going on from the sideline. But he did say the one thing that he was certain of and that he would say without any other context was that Chiro did not instigate whatever situation occurred, because he's like, I know Chiro as a man, as a player. And he's just not that guy. So, I mean, did it seem a little weird that of all the people on the field, we have a few firebrands, of all the people on the field, Chiro is the one who sees red?
Yeah, you have to think so. Especially so, we stayed in the West Star Club for the rest of the game. So it's a little bit of a different experience, especially when you get into looking into these kind of weird situations. Because I was watching the game on a TV, basically, with right. no sound either.
Right.
And immediately before there was an incident, someone got hurt or something. So my attention was elsewhere. So I really don't know. But yeah, you're right. When you see that Chiro's the person getting the red card, you have to kind of. I was completely taken aback by it, and I went. You know, he's one of the big guys on the field, so I kind of like. Yeah. Did he like punch someone or right. something? Like, like he's not. You're right. He's not the kind of person that will just yell at someone, you yeah. know, and start shouting. So you have to think. Like, was there just like? Did he just snap and?
Right.
You know, totally. You know, go off on someone, but yeah, it was shocking.
Yeah, I mean, if you expect anybody, it's probably Yuma in that situation, just based off what you see. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen now a few times, like, Locomotive players sent off. We always see, in the aftermath of any refereeing decision, Richie Ryan, yeah. Drew Becky, and not to say they're, you know, bad people. It's just literally they are the most outspoken when it comes to refereeing decisions. So I just find it hard to believe that Chiro said something that would be a red card offense, because having heard the stuff that gets said among soccer players and even to and including the referee, it's a very high bar of offensive language that would need to be met for somebody to be sent off just for speaking. So yeah, it's a weird one. But right after that, the game is set, you know, obviously at that point we're down to 10. It's 1-0. And Omar comes off the bench to kind of regulate the shape because Fox is taken back to left back to give us a back four. Omar's put up top in more of a traditional number 9 just to work hard and run off that last defender. And Locomotive earn a couple of set pieces, and Omar gets his reward for some hard work in the box by scoring that goal. I mean, we talk about the momentum of that first goal, but the momentum of that second, now down to 10, I mean, that's absolutely priceless.
It is, and I think Omar even had a chance probably like a minute or two before his actual goal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what threw me off more than anything when Omar scored was he took his first shot, I think he got blocked, and you just see him jump in the air, get frustrated,
yeah.
but somehow gets back into the place. I mean, it was great seeing, especially somebody from El Paso score on El Paso's strong night, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the initial ball in, yeah, Omar takes a shot, it's blocked. It comes out to Drew Becky, who actually has an option at that point because he's only about 6 yards out from goal, and he has an option to try to score, mm-hmm. and he instead nods it back across for Omar, and it you know it turns out to be a crucial touch. That type of decision from a defender, not always the easiest to make. It looks kind of easy in hindsight, but he easily could have tried to head that back on goal.
Yeah, no, I watched that back a few times because, you know, I've been a little bit critical of Drew on the pod in the past, and no, it's a big ups to him for, you know, getting the rebound and heading it into Omar's path. It's pretty clear that that's the decision that he made with that little time to make it. But also, I mean, credit to Omar because this starts with him creating his second corner.
Right.
After coming on, you know, just 2 minutes before. So, I mean, yeah, for an El Paso boy to make that big of an impact on the night, on what was already a really emotional night, it's just truly, it was poetic.
Yeah. I mean, the reaction from Omar after he scores, as he runs to the corner, and just the, just, I mean, it's barely a celebration because it's literally just him sprinting to the corner and just, like, pointing to the fans, up to his family, and I think they were probably up there in the West Star Club with you. But that kind of outpouring of emotion and then the, you know, the ensuing outpouring from the fans, it really kind of capped the night off in a very kind of cathartic way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not, I think, just not the emotions of the night, but probably frustration. Like, I think we talked about it before the match that maybe Mark left him on the bench to see if it would spark something from him. So I think it was that on top of what the night consisted of. So, I mean, it's, you could tell the way he yelled after scoring that it was like a big weight off his shoulders.
Right. And I mean, there had to have been a weight on the team as well, just in terms of it being El Paso's strong night and it being in the aftermath of all of this. Like, there had to have been pressure on the team as well, and especially for someone from El Paso, you know, a native, it seems like it would have been even, you know, kind of doubled for Omar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, like Christian had said kind of earlier, we come to these games to kind of forget, but nobody's going to forget what had, you know, happened a few weeks ago at this match, and I'm sure that was weighing on the players. Maybe, I don't know if they talked about it or you know, if they said, you know, let's give the fans something to cheer about, but they certainly did, and kudos to them.
So the rest of the match, it is definitely a case of trying to see the game out with 10 men. We see Memo come on. It's his home debut. He did make a late sub appearance in that loss in Fresno, but Memo making his home debut. And Christian, I think we had mentioned it in the group text. Memo gets a chance kind of late in the game to run onto a ball in behind and makes a really smart decision rather than the selfish one of taking it to the corner and helping kill the game off.
Yeah, I mean, from what I remember, it was not a kind of just, you know, I have the ball in some space and, you know, I'll just try and shoot. Like, I think it was a genuine chance that he could have really created a good opportunity for himself, but that just wasn't what the team needed at that point. And that I noticed it right away because I wondered, because when Edson was in that situation, I think in that Orange County game, he got a similar run. He decided to, you know, try and shoot the shot. So I was just kind of very eagerly watching to see what he would do, and I was very impressed that he did that. So, you know, good for him, and hopefully, you know, that shows Mark that, you know, he does have a little bit of discipline, and hopefully he'll get some more opportunities. I think I don't know if it was out of necessity or if it was intentional, but the other thing that I don't know if people noticed, but all Mark used all three subs, which he doesn't always do, and all three of them were the El Paso natives on the team.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was also part of it or if Mark really thought that Memo had done something in training this week that merited some time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably is played into by the fact that, well, one, I think he didn't want to use Jerome off the bench in this game. I think he had him as an option,
mm-hmm.
But if he could get away with it, he didn't want to run Jerome out. And then Memo definitely does. I think you can see it in this game and a little bit against Fresno. It was weird circumstances to come into a game, especially your first ever appearance for a team. But I think you can see the energy and just the qualities that Memo gives you in terms of ball retention and all of those things. We haven't seen him in genuinely attacking positions, but he's definitely shown at lower levels, in his time in the NPSL with Laredo Heat and these other teams. He's shown he's a goal scorer at other levels, but he hasn't really had that opportunity in a Locomotive shirt yet. But his instincts and in that case, his like unselfishness, I think really benefited the team. So it was nice to see that from a guy who hasn't really gotten a big opportunity with the team so far this year.
No, yeah, and I'm sure him, it just shows a lot to Mark that, like Christian says, instead of being selfish, going for the goal, he takes the ball to the corner and kills the time, So I think that goes a long way for him as well, for Mark to know that he can trust him to do what he needs to do instead of just trying to, build up his stats. So
Locomotive do see the win out. It's 2-0. A very big win for the team to end the losing streak and for the home fans to go home with something. And all 3 points this time around against Tacoma. Tough question for this one, but your guy's man of the match for this one. Mika, we can start with you on this one. Putting you on the spot.
I think I have to give it to Edson just because of how he just came right out of the gate wanting to play and wanting to make a difference. And then, of course, scoring that amazing, amazing bicycle kick. With a close second being Drew Becky. I think he had a good showing, possibly a return to form for him, next to Chiro and Toko for the 60-odd minutes he was on the pitch. So, yeah, I'll go with Edson first and then Becky, honorable mention.
It's funny because if Chiro hadn't been sent off, he would have been one of my candidates for man of the
match. Yeah, absolutely.
For 60 minutes, he was one of the best players.
And we kind of glanced over that kind of amazing block on the line that he had.
Right before he was sent off, actually. I didn't mention that, but that's a good shout.
Yeah,
I think that's her second goal line clearance this season. Mm-hmm. Becky's
had a couple.
Yeah, that was like in Becky's first game too.
Yeah,
I think. we kind of talked about how Tacoma kind of came out strong in the second half, and that was one of those moments where we definitely could have lost the lead at that point.
Yeah.
Chiro's a good honorable mention for the 60 minutes that he was on there, but like Mika said, I think we have to go with Edson. In a game where Logan didn't really have to do too much. I think he's kind of been the one that we've leaned on since our offense has been failing to produce. So he's kind of been our default, but he didn't have to do too much. And just the magnitude of Edson's goal, I think there's no other choice.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to agree.
I think I do have to – we obviously need to give a shout-out to Drew Becky for getting named in Team of the Week, I would say, obviously, numbers-wise, looked really good. Gets an assist, essentially, for Omar's goal. I don't know if he actually gets credited with it because the initial shot is blocked, I think, after the knockdown. But, it is straight onto his. It's a volley, or first time. He takes it first time.
No, he did get credited for the assist.
Yeah, so he gets the assist. So credit to Drew. It was a really good performance. And I will give a shout out. Obviously, he not starting it makes it tough. But Omar coming on, grabbing a goal, which was huge, and then putting in a really kind of workman-like performance, I would say. We always talk about his ability on the ball and his ability to beat defenders one-on-one. But in this game, he was definitely putting in a lot of work. You know, down to, it's the second game in a row that he's come off the bench when we're down to 10. And he made his presence felt in this game in particular, I think, and kept Tacoma a little bit more honest, going, working that back line. So something I want to add, in the pod this week is just a quick roundup of this past weekend's Western Conference. So I'm just going to whip around real quick. So last Friday, Fresno and Rail Monarchs drew 1-1. OKC Energy beat Timbers 4-2, so a pretty impressive win for OKC. Phoenix coming away with a 4-2 win against Reno, because duh. Phoenix wins every single game. Then San Antonio and RGV in a Copa Tejas match on Saturday drew 2-2. RGV was down to 10 and came down from 2-0, so absolutely, I mean, they did it against us, so they've shown they've shown that they can do that in the past. But that's a really good result for RGV.
Which, by the way, saves Locomotive in the Copa Tejas.
Yeah. With that tie. If San Antonio had won, I think we would have been mathematically eliminated. Yeah. But now, with two wins, Locomotive have a chance with help. They have a chance of still taking the Copa Tejas, which we can talk about in a little bit. Austin Bold put one on Tulsa 5-1. New Mexico drew against Los Dos 2-2, so it's always nice to see New Mexico drop points. Orange County beat Vegas 3-0. Vegas had another player sent off, which would be funnier if we hadn't had two games in a row with red cards. And then Sac Republic. Okay, I gotta air something about Sac Republic. We haven't No shade on Sac Republic in general. I got no beef with them. They just signed Thomas Enevoldsen from Indy 11. He was last year's Golden Boot winner, the top scorer in USL for OC. He joins Indy 11. It's not really working out. He goes to Sac Republic. He's back in the Western Conference, which kind of upsets me to begin with. Scores a brace in his first game back with Sac Republic. Granted, it's against Colorado. But then in both of the tweets about him scoring, Sac Republic spelled his name wrong in both.
I mean, are we in a position to talk? I mean, we kind of did ruin Omar's jersey, so I mean...
We ruined Omar's jersey.
You can delete tweets, though.
I was like, yeah, and we credit a wrong person on our own highlight tweet, so
true,
I don't know.
True. Okay. Maybe I'm being overly harsh. But anyway, so that leaves the Western Conference. It leaves Locomotive 11th, just below the playoff line, but with a game in hand on Portland, who's in 10th, and two games in hand on OKC and LA Galaxy 2, who are in 8th and 9th. So in reality, we have a game in hand on New Mexico, who's in 7th on 34 points, and we have 32 points. So we could, with a win of our game in hand, move ahead of New Mexico on points. So
I mean, looking at it, there's what, a 4-point difference between us and fourth?
Yeah. Yeah, 36 points. Austin Bold in fourth with 36 points, and we are in 11th with 32. So that is
with the game in hand,
a very, very small gap. Now, obviously, the top three is kind of distanced itself in the West. But, I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the season. We maybe adjusted our expectations after that 9-game unbeaten run. But where we're at now, playoffs is still kind of the expectation, right?
I think so. And, I mean, just the way the conference sits right now, you know, a top 5 seed is still very much attainable. You know, we just have to hope that this weekend was kind of a, you know, another one of those turning points of the season for us. I think next week is going to be rough, you know, with the probable Chiro suspension. Who knows what's going on with Rebellion? You know, he took quite a shot at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So no idea if he's going to show up on Saturday. So with two of our, you know, back four and probably two of the, you know, I'd say the top two out of our back four not being in there, I think it's a tall order still. But hopefully with the momentum, you know, the goal starting to come back slowly for us, that bodes well for the team.
I think a top six finish is doable. The guarantee that we don't have to play that one, the play-in game?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, if we can finish fourth to get a home game, that would be great. And, I mean, just looking at the standings, it's definitely doable. And I think we're taking a turn. Like, I think Mark mentioned recently, the injuries are starting to, like, slow down. So we're kind of getting back to our form. So we'll see. But I think it's doable to finish top six.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. It's a crazy league because right now we need a little bit of luck. Not on the field, well, on the field too, but in the injury department more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think somebody asked this to us, but I just wonder if anyone else is having, like, this injury crisis
right.
in the Western Conference, because it's just, it's like a fact of life with Locomotive at the moment. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. We need to... Texas Tech, what's going on? I know you're the official, what is it, the official, like, healthcare partner.
So as we throw to our listener questions real quick, there's just a couple. But so the first one came from at Jake Konecki. So he's been, shout out to Jake, because he found us through Facebook, I think, and mm-hmm. then has, like, since got, like, more vocal just like commenting and
hopefully
everything.
Hopefully they're not like Locals Nation.
No, well, I mean, either way, we're cool with them now. Locals Nation is not that active, straight
it
up.
It really isn't.
There's not that much on there.
I don't know if you guys saw, I don't know if USL tweeted it or on Facebook, they like called out four different teams and we were one of them.
Like join your like national forum or whatever.
I think New Mexico was one of them too. It was us and I can't remember the other two, but they like called them out.
But he put out a lineup, which I think it's worth talking about. It's essentially a 4-4-2, kind of a flat 4-4-2.
Yeah.
But it's got Omar and Sebastian Velasquez in the wide positions, then Contreras in that central position with Chapa, and then our new signing Alexi Bassetti and Jerome Kiesewetter starting up top. Do you think Mark would ever go for something this attacking?
No.
Yeah. I don't. Well, first of all, Velasquez is there twice.
I think he just meant Contreras. It's the Sebs.
Well, they have the numbers there too. Yeah. So. Yeah.
No. And by the way, I really like these tactical questions. I love talking tactics. So. Yeah. Keep them coming. But no, yeah, this is a little bit too attacking. And then I saw it and I started thinking, well, does he mean like a 4-2-2-2 where it's like what RB Leipzig ran like last year, like Ralf Rangnick's really attacking system?
Yeah.
It's definitely fun, like, to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a good FIFA lineup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but if USL's in FIFA, I'm trotting this out quite often.
Hey, there's like a PES mod for FIFA, so I've heard.
Oh, dang.
Or for FIFA, for PES.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I've seen
for USL.
Yeah, for USL, that's what I meant to say, so.
So, yeah, I think, I mean, do you think that maybe if the two in the middle are Chapa and, you know, Richie, do you think it's something that is more possible?
Maybe so, just because if it's Chapa Richie as the pivot, then Chapa gives the mobility and Richie is kind of like the defensive presence.
I'd want to switch out Foxy for Byron, for Rebellion.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't. Because
you know
that,
Velasquez is going to be coming in a lot.
Yeah.
So we need somebody.
You
on
need
the right
that. Side. You need the overlap.
And then you put Fox on the left instead of McKinney, and then Ryan on the right.
I always
but
like
it's really,
Salgado on the. On the right,
yeah,
so you can cut in.
Yeah,
but
just offer.
No, that's
offer
a fun. That's a fun idea.
I like it, and I like those type of discussions because it's just it is, you know, it doesn't have to you're allowed to question, you know, would this look good?
And, absolutely.
Somebody has that pest mod. Please put that in.
Yeah, for real. I need to find that. Do like a career mode or something. Or Master League. As Pez has it, yeah. So along those lines, Lou, at Lou Tep Minor, do you think Omar returns to the starting lineup on Saturday? I'll pose that question. And who do you think makes way? If you think he's coming back.
Yeah, I have no idea if Bosetti, if he's the type of player that would play wide, like where we would put Omar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Mark would want to maybe put Bosetti out there if he's ready. If Jerome's healthy, then Jerome starts, obviously. But if he's not, then yeah, I think Omar gets a shot. I'd like, just kind of from what we've seen this week, maybe, you know, either have Contreras or Velasquez on the bench and only have one of them in there and, you know, put, maybe put Edson out there instead too, just because he's having this, you know, this kind of streak going. So it's possible that Omar comes back.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, who do you take out?
It's
a good problem to have.
Yeah. And it's interesting too because Mark said specifically in his press conference after this one that, you know, I asked the question of, with Bosetti coming in and Jerome Kiesewetter returning from injury, like, what does the attack look like, you know, in the coming weeks? And he essentially said that he wants to be able to have a rotation. He wants, mm-hmm. He doesn't want it to be, oh, like, you're good and you suck and that's it. You know, like, you're on the bench because you're not good and you're mm-hmm. playing because you are. He's like, I want them to push each other and I want them to be fighting for those places. So he sees, based on what he said, it seems like he sees Bosetti as a 10 or like playing off a striker. Probably as a more, like less in, of like a 10 in
the Griezmann mold.
Yeah. More of a, whatever, shadow striker, whatever you want to call it, but a guy who plays off of the main number 9, which makes sense given the fact, you know, if Jerome is coming back. But then you also have Seth Velasquez, who plays as more of a traditional, like, number 10. So that already creates a little bit of a dilemma because you can't really have both. So it is a little bit of an interesting kind of selection problem for Mark. But, I mean, is there such a thing as too many options in attack?
Not the way things have gone.
Yeah, with injuries.
I think it's just going to come down to whoever we're playing that week.
So, I mean, yeah, and I think he kind of saw it with the way that Tacoma defended super narrow, right? They're defending the kind of the width of the box. They're not gonna, so that's why when Edson was getting forward, he's in tons of space because they didn't really push their defense out that wide.
Mm.
I think it's interesting if we get RGV in kind of a similar spot. You know, do you want Omar in those, with those opportunities to be able to like isolate that fullback, because we've seen he can just trash people on his day. So I mean, is RGV kind of that opportunity to get Omar running at an inexperienced fullback?
Yeah, I've kind of given up on trying to predict Mark Lowry's lineups. And I mean, it's the same thing with my Arsenal fandom and Unai Emery. You just never know, which is a good thing. I agree with you and everything you're saying. It's good to have that competition and for nobody to get too comfortable and know that they're a starter week in, week out. You know, we're getting towards the business end of the season, as it were, and competition's good.
So, I mean, that offers us a decent segue. Alexi Bosetti, as we said, joining Lokomotiv in a swap deal. Derek Gebhard heads the other way. Kind of a weird one for us because Derek, obviously, you know, we went through this a little bit with Calvin leaving, but Derek having scored the first goal in Lokomotiv club history. I mean, it's a kind of a tough one to take that it didn't work out.
Yeah, and I think that towards the end of Derek's Locomotive tenure, he was pretty unlucky, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think he put in a shift, and I think he got into a lot of good goal-scoring positions. I mean, yes, I'm not going to absolve the player of everything. There were times where he made a decision that perhaps he shouldn't have, where he should have shot instead of passed. But on the whole, I feel like he always gave, you know, everything that he could on the pitch, and sometimes things weren't just breaking his way. So to see our first ever goal scorer head out is definitely, it sucks. But I think we're getting a cracking player in exchange, though. So, I mean,
I'll definitely come back to you to talk Alexi Bissetti, because Mika is a French football stan, so it's good. But I mean, for you guys, like, was it just a case of Derek might need a little bit of a change of scenery?
Yeah, I think that, like Mika said, I think if unlucky is, even if you asked Derek, he would probably say that unlucky is the word to describe this season, because he came out of the gate, you know, with obviously the first goal and, you know, a couple of good matches start, then he got injured. And, you know, I think that that really kind of turned the table on the rest of the season for him. I think that he, with Locomotive, he couldn't really come back from that. So hopefully kind of getting that change of scenery and maybe, you know, a clean slate really is just what he needs. And I hope to see him succeed. You know, if we have to play him, I hope that we, you know, squash every attempt that he has. But I wouldn't mind, you know, if he gets, you know, four or five more on any other team before the end of the season.
Sure. I mean, Bissetti joining, he obviously, it was a high profile signing for OKC. Is there any, I mean, Austin, I'll throw this to you. Is there any concern that he made 19 appearances for OKC and scored just the one goal?
I mean, looking at the numbers just straight up, you know, an eye test is, there's always that concern. But I think it turns into the same thing for Derek. You know, it's maybe just bad luck and needs a change of scenery. I haven't done a whole lot of research on Bissetti, so I haven't really seen any of his games, really. So, again, you know, it's sometimes just bad stroke of luck. And I mean, you see even the top strikers in the world go through it all the time, where no matter what you do, sometimes you just go through a rough stretch. The ball's just not going into the net.
Mika, I mean, you really rate Alexi Bissetti, and he came up through Nice, obviously a very, very strong club in France. Played the last couple of seasons at Lavallois before he joined OKC. So, I mean, is this just a case of getting this guy in the right situation to succeed?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, and I think that it's pretty obvious why we went for him, is because we do need goals. Like you said a little bit earlier, I can see him playing in the kind of that 10 or that shadow striker center forward role, but he has played wide and as the lone striker before. So I'm happy to see that he can be flexible tactically for us, given that we do have this injury bug. And so we might need to, you know, move people around and make room. But yeah, I mean, he's French international. He obviously, all of the local media are saying that he's a World Cup winner, which is technically true. he won the U-20 World Cup in 2013 with France. And right. I mean, I'm just going to give just a brief breakdown of the kind of players that were in this team. I mean, Kurt Zouma, Samuel Umtiti, Paul Pogba, Luka Dinia, Florian Thauvin. Like, these are players that have, you know, are playing at the highest level in Europe, and some of whom have won the most recent World Cup. So it's really cool to see that a player that, you know, has played around players like this is coming to Locomotive and has that experience at, you know, a really high level. So I think he's a good player. I think maybe a little, like we said, it's a cliche, but it's a true one. You know, a change of scenery can be a great thing for a player, and hopefully he'll, you know, help us get into the off season or postseason. Excuse me.
I know I was thinking that he would be making his debut against Tacoma, having been in the league. He obviously doesn't, but we do have a game this Saturday, RGV away, in McAllen. Tough place to go from most who talk in USL. San Antonio playing them in San Antonio this week. It's a 2-2 draw. So, I mean, with a Copa Tejas match against RGV, we drew against them 2-2 in probably one of the most gut-punching games of the season. What are we thinking going into this RGV, playing against an MLS 2 side? Is there kind of an archetype there where we kind of know what to expect in that they will be willing to get forward and try to score, but they're also going to be a little naive defensively? Are we just kind of settling into that for MLS 2 sides?
I think it's proven true basically in every match that we've played against a MLS 2 squad, so no reason to think that it wouldn't in this case. I think I always wonder, if memories of what happened the last time we played them kind of stick in the player's mind, and maybe, they're coming out with a chip on their shoulder, determined to, come out with that lead and not give it up this time. So I think that we'll definitely need to be strong defensively, especially if we're going to be missing some of our, those defensive keys. So hopefully we can just take advantage of their aggression.
This is a RGV team that has scored 38 goals this season, so, pretty decent return. But they've also allowed 44 and only have 3 clean sheets. Is this just a case of, we've seen those, the beginning of the season we had the kind of prototypical Locomotive aways, which was try really hard for like 30 minutes to score and then just make sure we keep that clean sheet. Is that kind of the approach that we should take against RGV?
I don't think so at this point in the season anymore, because I think at this point we need the 3 points much more than we are happy with the 1 point. So I think that maybe at some point they kind of decide to just close up shop, but hopefully it's not until, midway through the second half or something. I want them to kind of come out swinging.
Sure.
Yeah, I think Christian makes up a good point. At this point in the season, you can't, rely on getting the 1 point on the road, no matter, any point you get on the road is a good point. But here we are, we're going into the last third of the season. We're just outside the playoff picture, so, I'm pretty sure Mark sees that as well, and I'm sure he's going to want to attack. And I'm sure these guys also want to, get a little bit of payback from when they came up here and spoiled what could have been the first win in Locomotive history. So,
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
That does feel like so long ago.
It really does.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they battle back from 2-0 down?
Yeah.
At Senate? Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I think we started a 2-0 channel.
Yeah. After that,
they've done it multiple times.
Yeah, they have a history of this, and I think that we're not in any position whatsoever to take them lightly. I think they do have a lot of those features of an MLS 2 sides in terms of the naivete and giving up a lot of possession, but I don't think they're quite like defiance.
Sure.
I think they've got a little bit more to them tactically and mentally, obviously, because they don't fold at 2-0 down a lot. So yeah, I think it's a tricky fixture. It's hard to say how it's gonna go, but
that is the next step. I'm gonna come for you. So I gotta shout out Christian, because Christian got the last prediction right with a 2-0 win for Locomotive. He's coming for Nostradamus crown. He's got a few right.
Two of the last three, I think.
So Christian, I'm gonna put you on the spot first, because You've been the king of predictions. So what are we going to see out there in RGV?
Okay, so I kind of screwed myself last week by saying that Jerome was going to score the brace, not knowing if he was even going to be match fit. So I'm going to try and prevent that this week. I'm going to say 1-0, and I think Edson continues his scoring streak.
Dang, we get a new leader in terms of, a new attention grabber in terms of Edson actually getting the headlines for being consistent. So, I mean, Austin, how are you feeling about this one?
I'm going to call 1-0-2, but Velasquez is going to come away with the goal.
Okay. Yeah, I think we've been waiting for the Seb Velasquez goal, and we keep talking about, I know me and Christian spent the last 2 weeks talking about game state affecting how Seb has played, and now I think in this last one, he was affected by the fact that another 10 was also playing. Yeah. So it was a little bit of a weird one for him.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that moment for him to just, you know, nutmeg somebody and put it top bins with his left foot. But it's coming. I feel good about that.
We just know he's going to bring out a pretty fire celebration once he does.
Oh, absolutely. We know he's got the drip for sure. The pre-match outfits have proved as much.
Yo, those fits are fire.
Oh, I'm not digging the hat though, man. The Pharrell hat, the Smokey the Bear hat. I don't love it.
That hat is probably Louis. Like that.
Yeah, really.
You can buy $500 white t-shirts. That doesn't make it any nicer.
But
than...
we're talking about these hype beast drops. We gotta support all of them.
Hype beast.
So Mika, I mean, so we got 2 1-0s on the board, which is, I mean, I'll say you guys were saying not the typical away performance, but 1-0 would be a straight up Lowry away.
But it's because I don't want to call 2-0 because then we're going to score 2 and then RGV is going to somehow pull it out of their ass.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm not going to say anything approaching 2-0.
Yeah.
Also, I thought I was being unorthodox calling for a win instead of a draw, quite honestly.
Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, man. Honestly, I really was thinking to go 1-0 as well. I think we need the win as far as Copateas is concerned because we don't have a win in the competition. And I think the last time I looked at the table, Austin Bold is really in the driver's seat.
San Antonio on 8, having played a game more than Austin.
Right. So
Austin's on 7.
Done.
Yeah, San Antonio is done. So they literally need everybody. Like Austin would have to draw, and then RGV and El Paso like drawing would be, I think. Mm. No, that still wouldn't be enough because El Paso because we could still.
Because no, we still have to play Austin, I think.
Yeah.
Essentially, San Antonio needs us to beat Austin. But
we have to beat Austin for them to win, but yeah. But us winning, if we beat RGV and Austin, then we're above San Antonio. So it's, yeah, it's a weird one for sure. Because we could end up on 9 points if we get, we're on 3 right now. So two wins in our 2 remaining games could be enough if other results go our way.
Yeah, so we need to win the 2 and then we need either RGV to win or for them to draw, right?
Yeah, we need RGV to beat Austin or draw.
We're at 3 draws and a loss, right?
Three points from draws against Austin, San Antonio, and RGV.
We've tied against everyone.
And then we just the 1 loss against San Antonio because they somehow signed Frank Lopez midseason on a loan. And
Philly, you got to let it go.
So, anyways. I'm going to go... My prediction, I'll go for a little bit of demons being exercised by Locomotive 2-1. So they go close to repeating that first matchup disaster and just hold off the charge from RGV. I will go. Goal scorers is tough. Let's go Edson because he's got the hot hand right now, and let's go for. I'm gonna go totally unorthodox and just try to speak this into existence. Brian Rebillon. Like thunderbolt, like just on a volley, maybe a corner headed back out of the area, and Rebillon just unleashes one full volley.
Unless he hits like one of those like Patrice Evra, like 30, 40 yard out.
That's what I'm saying. Like it just comes off right off the outside of the boot, just kind of swerves in. Yeah, that's what
Travilla.
I'll try to speak that into reality. But overall, I mean, it's funny. You know, we went around the table and we all predicted a Locomotive win. I think really it's more so about us all feeling the need to win this game, mm-hmm. more so than us saying, oh yeah, we're just going to go out and whoop ass. Mm-hmm. As you can tell by the one goal, the one goal wins that we're all predicting. I think this is a tough matchup. I think it's winnable,
mm-hmm.
but I think Locomotive have to be very good in order to win it. So that is what differs from this last matchup against Tacoma, where we didn't necessarily have to be at our best to win. I think against RGV, if we want all 3 points, we're going to have to put in a performance closer to the opening half, you know, the first half against Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
than how we played against Tacoma.
Agree, yeah.
And I'm curious, too, to see, like, what kind of loan bomb they might get, because I checked, they're traveling to Dallas on Sunday, and they're, like, right outside the playoff picture, so I don't know if Houston's, like, even thinking about sending anybody.
Yeah, that's what I don't think they'll have. I don't think it'll be a huge number, certainly, with MLS getting to the business end, but it is tough that they're not playing on the same day,
because
normally that makes it a little easier. But I'm certain they won't send anyone down of any, like, you know, no first teamers are going to be seen down at the down at RGV, but maybe a couple of fringe players end up down there if they don't end up in the 18 for that Dallas match. So always a little tough to predict for the two sides, but we are hoping for a good match this weekend. We'll be bringing you the supporter watch along as we always do on live on YouTube, so you guys can watch that for some alternate commentary. I know some of the USL aways are rough in terms of commentary, and especially the MLS2 sides, not trying to throw too much shade, but they normally don't invest too much in the production value of those matches for their two sides. So it might just be better for you guys to flip on, you know, mute those and watch the match with us, just yelling random shit over the match, because it's just more entertaining that way, and you can experience all the highs and lows as you're experiencing them with us. We hope you guys have enjoyed this episode of Seriously Loco. You can check us out on all your favorite podcasting platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all over the place. Social media, we're on Facebook, Instagram. Christian's doing a killer job with the Instagram lately. Just absolutely. He's definitely getting that content out there. Twitter, and it's all Seriously Loco EPTX. So check us out. We will be, we will be looking forward to this match against RGV. Hopefully Locomotive can salvage some Copa Tejas points out of it and somehow weasel their way into a trophy. But for all of us here at Seriously Loco, until next time, guys, stay loco.